Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be bright.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions for me or for my guests that you would like to make during this broadcast, please feel free to write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my wonderful, fabulous co-hostess for tonight, I do want to mention to everyone who's listening that we're going to be having our annual healing weekend, April 29th and 30th, here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 5 minutes away from the airport, 20 minutes away from the train station, and I'm looking forward to having a wonderful time meeting some new wonderful women and seeing again some of our other members who are there to give aid and comfort or just to keep along that healing track. So there's no cost for our healing weekend except your cost for travel and food, and everybody who comes to one really feels that this is a wonderful experience that can be life-changing for you. And in fact, as I am listening, you know, I'll talk to you a little more about it, but if you are interested, write to me at bonkaye@aol.com and just put in the headline Healing Weekend and I'll put you on the list for information. And one of the women who I was able to meet at my last Healing Weekend, a dream come true, is my co-host for tonight, Ms. Suzette Vernon. Welcome, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie.
I have to talk to you like they talk to me at Longhorn Restaurant. Have you been on the show before? Yes. Well, then, welcome back. That's how I have to greet you. Welcome back.
I have to do it. Welcome back.
Yeah, like they do at Longhorn. Yeah. So, Suzette, we were so excited to have you come to our last healing weekend. I mean, it was just, for me, like I say, a dream come true to actually have the chance to meet you in person. But
me too.
The women who are listening to this who haven't been to one of the weekends, maybe you could tell them a little bit how you felt about it.
Sure. First of all, the major thing for me was seeing Bonnie. We had been talking for years online, over the telephone, and via email. And when I say years, wasn't it about 10 years, Bonnie, or 15
mm-hmm.
years?
Yep.
And we had never seen each other. So it was
mm-hmm.
a special treat for me to see Bonnie for the very first time. That was a moment. And second to that, of course, was meeting the fantastic women that came to the conference. They were all wonderful women, smart women, self-actualized women, but they all had the same experience. They either had just found out that their husband was gay, or they were living with that situation trying to get out of it. And so it was really a bonding moment, because a lot of times you feel so isolated in that situation. So to meet other people, to know that you're not alone, I think that was the biggest thing that everybody took away, is that I'm not alone, I'm not crazy, you know. There are other women here, they're smart, they're beautiful, they've gone through this too. And it was just a sense of sisterhood that took place at the conference.
I think that nobody can really understand us like we understand us, and that's the problem, is that these marriages mm-hmm. and divorces are not like any others, because there's so many other issues that are tied in with them. So you
mm-hmm.
always feel really isolated, or that people don't understand you, or people are telling you, why can't you just get over it already, or why are you making such a big deal out of it? People get divorced all the time. Why are you sitting and taking so long to recover from this? And it's
yeah.
not bad enough that you're going through the recovery, but then on top of it, you have to feel ashamed of it. So here,
yeah.
we're just having women who know exactly what you're feeling without even saying anything. And the fact
mm-hmm.
that they've had, you know, people are in all different phases of recovery. And I think you can concur with this, that gay husband recovery is not something that takes a month or 6 months or a year. It's an ongoing process, because not only is it the collapse of a marriage, but it's rebuilding your life into something
yeah.
that you have forgotten even existed, if it ever existed. You know, many of
yeah.
our women get married when they're young. They haven't had much dating experience. They come from, like you did, a religious background, or they had other issues. They came from families where there was a lot of dysfunction going on, and they
yeah.
ran into something that they thought would be safe and secure, only to have it backfire and become really a nightmare. And then they can't understand, you know, how this happened, because they're not always getting the truth, or usually not getting the truth, and self-internalizing that the blame of their marriage is their own fault instead of the real issue of homosexuality. So
mm-hmm.
just starting off again, and, you know, maybe this is something you can address, because it came up in our support room, about what happens when you have your marriage break up, and you're feeling sad and lonely, and you're looking for that comfort that you haven't had for 10 or 20 or 30 years. And you start dating, and you're just really raw, and you're picking up men who know that. You know, I say inevitably you're going to get hurt if you don't heal yourself first. Do you agree with that?
Totally, and I think I've made this analogy prior, but it's sharp, it's blood in the water. Whenever you've, you know, come out of a really bad situation where you've been wounded, and you rush because of yearnings and stuck feeling starved for love, you rush, you know, into a relationship with the first person that pays you any attention. And the sad thing about it is, then you get hurt, and you're like, oh God, what did I do? You know, I'm crazy. No, it's just that you weren't healed, so there was blood in the water. And whenever there's blood in the water, it always attracts sharks. So
uh-huh.
in order for you not to attract predatory type men into your life, you've got to stop the hemorrhage. You've got to stop the bleeding. You've got to do it before you
yeah,
get back to
the end.
Yeah,
these men can really sense.
Dating.
Yeah, I mean, they can really sense when you're weak. And they can really sense your desperation when you come out of these relationships, because I think that we all, you know, send out those signals, right?
Yeah, and we have blind spots. And the reason they call them blind spots is because you can't see it. So to you, you're acting normal, you're acting strong, you're acting like it don't matter, and they are picking up on that scent of your hemorrhage just the same. So if you don't want that to keep happening, you have to, you really, you know, it's like you have to swallow your pride and go get help. Because a lot of women feel like, no, I got this. I got this. I don't need to go get help. All I need to do is get out of this marriage, and I'll be just fine. No, baby doll, it don't work that way. It doesn't work that way. You've got to, whenever you have been hurt, and it's so interesting that we understand it when it comes to our physical body. If I broke my arm today, Bonnie, I would not be sitting here thinking I had it all together. I'd be going to the doctor because it's excruciating pain. I can hardly move it, and I go to the doctor, right?
Uh-huh.
So when you've been in a marriage with a gay husband, my God, that's, to me, that's just as much, just as hurtful and harmful and, you know, demoralizing as a physical wound. Yet we don't want to go get help. We'd rather go back out into the dating world, or call ourselves not dating, but just going out into our community, and then blame the other man, you know, blames this new man for us getting hurt again, when he is not responsible for our health. We are. Any man you meet at a bar or a friend's party or walking down the aisle of a grocery store is not responsible for your health and well-being. You are responsible for your health and well-being. So when you get sick, you get hurt, you go to a doctor. You go to a professional who specializes in healing broken hearts and helping to restore you. And then you get to a point from that counseling where you're ready to move forward, then you come see a coach. And that person help you to move forward and reclaim your life. But you've got to stop the hemorrhage first. You've got to.
And I think that's such great advice. And, in fact, one of our women posted an article this week, and it was really interesting, and it led me to another article by the same author. And it's called How to Break Free from a Toxic Relationship. And it was written a couple years ago, but the author was wonderful. And, in fact, she'll be coming on the show sometime in January, because I approached her and I said, I really love what you had to say. But one of the things she starts out with is saying, in my last relationship, I stayed long past the relationship's expiration date. I love that. It said, desperately hoping things would change, I sacrificed myself in the hope that he would turn into my happily ever after. A year ago, I walked away from the relationship with a promise to myself that I would listen to my inner guide and never again stay in a situation that felt wrong. Soon after, I started to date another man who was similar to my ex. I noticed that although the men were different people, the one thing they had in common was me, which meant I was bringing baggage from the first relationship into the new one. Yeah. I immediately called it quits and put myself on a one-year dating detox. This past year has been the most liberating year of my life. After a year of celibacy, I have more clarity, self-love, and self-trust. I know what I need, and I will no longer settle for a toxic relationship. Here are some signs that you may be in a toxic relationship and some ideas for how to break free. Your partner doesn't support your dreams or the direction you're going in life. You have to sacrifice yourself to make them happy. Your pets, kids, family, or friends don't like them. They hide important things from you or don't communicate openly. Their attitude about their ex is negative and demeaning. They don't do what they say they will. Whether you're seeking a relationship, evaluating a less than fulfilling one, rebounding from a bad breakup, or working through issues with a partner, these tips can help. So the first one says, focus on what you want. Rather than focusing on the action, situation, and hang-ups of another person, focus on what you want. If you're in a relationship that feels unfulfilling, focus on the qualities that attract you to the other person. Soon enough, you'll see your relationship improve. If you're single, spend time visualizing and understanding your feelings about what the perfect relationship looks like to you. That's what you should be looking for. Look in your relationship mirror. The people we date can become our teachers. We attract romantic relationships that can help us grow. Almost every partner can become a mirror, and learning to look in your relationship mirror can help save you from years of heartache and pain. It allows you to be more accountable and stop repeating patterns. For example, I was once in a relationship with a man who had extreme anger problems. Once I got honest with myself and looked in the mirror, I recognized that I was unhappy and angry with myself for settling and staying with someone when I knew the situation wasn't right. Mm-hmm. Look at your own relationships, present or past, and see how your partner mirrors an aspect of you. You can ask what bothers you about them. Maybe they lied to you, and although you didn't lie to them, you see that you're being dishonest in some area of your life. Learning to accept those unhealed areas of your life is a key to happy romance. Trust your inner guide. Don't waste time in mediocre relationships. If you have to sacrifice yourself in any way to be with someone, it isn't the right relationship for you. Take the time to use your inner guidance system, you know, that gut feeling that shows you the red flags. That feeling should always be trusted. Trust yourself and walk away from any situation that doesn't feel right. Skip over any relationship that doesn't make your heart sing. Your future self will sincerely thank you. What did you think of that?
I thought it was wonderful, and a lot of it was very similar to what I had prepared tonight when we were talking to, talk about boundaries, and I was like, oh, God, that's part of what she's saying in her own words, some of the points that I have about boundaries, because that's what she's talking about. In a lot of ways, she's talking about where you end and where he ends. You know, what that boundary is, or where you end and where he begins, excuse me. That's what she's talking about. And so many times that gets all blurry, and we don't know where we end, where he begins. It's all enmeshed. And so I think that's a very good segue into talking about boundaries.
And that's one of the topics that I asked Suzette to talk about tonight. We started it last week with Dr. Brian Hooper, but many of our women have stated that when they start new relationships, you know, they never were able to form boundaries in their present relationships to their gay husbands, because every time there were no boundaries, you know, that wouldn't be overstepped, because, of course, you don't know what you're dealing with. And I always tell women, stop internalizing the blame for the failure in your marriage. That has nothing to do with you whatsoever. It doesn't matter how great a wife you are. It's not going to change the situation of being married to a gay man who will never be happy with you because you're a woman. I mean, they may love you like a sister, but they're not going to be loving you like a wife. So you have to be able to stop internalizing that you've done something wrong and realize that you haven't put up any boundaries because you're so afraid. You know, you get pushed down and pushed down. I think, Suzette, what happens is the more that you try to put up any boundaries, they get crumpled over and you just accept it because you're so afraid that something's wrong that you have no control of because you don't know what's going on. So maybe you can talk a little bit about now, if you have to, even if you're in your situation, you want to get stronger. If you don't have any boundaries, you're never going to be strong, even getting out of your relationship. Would you say that's true?
I say that 100% true. You've got to have a boundary, even if the first boundary is to pay attention to how you feel. One of the boundaries that a lot of times I talk with my coaching clients that are straight wives is I tell them, I said, listen, I said, I'll let you have the first session, maybe the second session, to talk about, you know, your pain, to get it out. What he did, la la la, get it out. I said, but at some point, you have to stop making it all about him. You have to stop making it all about him. And so some of the things that we've talked about, I have four things, and there are more, but I said I think four will be meaty enough to talk about in the time that we have left. One of them that's very important, ladies, And it's not in any certain order, but it's very important. And any gents that are listening as well, stop the pain talk. It's one thing to tell people what you've been through, but it's another thing when you go into the pity party, poor me, low vibration, he done me wrong, it's all about him talk. And in my coaching practice, that is one of the first hurdles. My clients are so full of their gay speak, their gay husband's speak, there isn't enough room for them to hear their own voice or hear their own heart. And, you know, I know sometimes we get angry and we need to vent. I'm not talking about venting. But if your whole aspect, your whole life, your whole, you know, everything about you becomes about all low vibration, it's his fault. He didn't do it. Almost like you got a tracking mechanism on your gay husband. And you're blaming him for everything. It rained today. It's his fault. The car doesn't have gas. It's his fault. You know, it's like everything. I stumped my toe. It's his fault. And we have to start being able to say, listen, after a while you get to a point, it's like, you know, I am so sick of this poor man. I am tired of it. I am sick of hearing myself say it. I'm sick of him having that much power over me. That I'm allowing this person to dominate so much that that's all I can talk about. You know, and I told a client of mine just last week who's going through a separation divorce from her gay husband. I said, baby doll, your moving away physically is just geography. If you don't start making yourself a priority before you leave him, he'll be running your life from wherever you are. There's got to be a disconnect. There's got to be a detachment. And a lot of times it starts with us stopping this stuff of letting, sitting in a corner, sucking our thumb, rocking back and forth and blaming him for it. You have to stop and get your out of you and say, wait a minute, hold up, stop. Stop. Stop this. You look at yourself in the mirror with all those tears coming down your face, and you say, stop it. Stop it. Secondly, you have to change the way you think. Instead of always holding every action, thought, feeling of what he did or didn't do, ask yourself, what do I want? And then ask yourself, how can I give it to myself? And then lastly, how do I release myself from guilt or shame from giving it to myself where my gay ex agrees or criticizes me for it? So,
and that's a very good question, because it happens quite often. You know, rather than internal, you know, what happens, we internalize the blame when it has nothing to do with us. It's just that they're not willing to take responsibility.
Yeah, I've had people say, well, I can't do this because I'm like, why come you can't? Well, he might get mad. I'm like, well, does he get a vote? I mean, man is treating you like nothing, and you're afraid that he's going to get mad and he's going to give you the silent treatment? I'm like, wait, whoa, he doesn't get a vote here. You know, if your plan is to leave him, start practicing him not having a vote. You know, start practicing, and if you need someone to help you, to hold your hand and hold you accountable as you make yourself, you know, you put yourself first, then that's where you get a counselor or a coach. But you've got to change the way you think and make it from him-centered to you-centered. Because here's the thing, Bonnie, the opposite of boundaries is enmeshment. And enmeshment is when you take responsibility for someone else's feelings and need their approval or their validation before you can give yourself permission to do what you need to do. And so, you know, we got to change the way we think about this man who we're in the process of trying to leave. You know, really.
I think that's so true, and I think it's very hard to do. And especially if you're still living with him, and especially if he's still manipulating you, and especially if he's, you know, a controlling kind of person who's controlling what you do, what you think, what you say. I mean, I agree with 100% of what you say. Unfortunately, it's just not always that simple. And to be honest with you, Suzette, I know for myself, when I was younger, it just was a blessing that the marriage ended. But, you know, if I had to stay in it, I didn't have the strength to fight it. And I think that a lot of our women are kind of worn down. And one of them, and one of the women in our group is a dear friend of mine, you know, it made me so sad today when I read, she posted this, why do I feel like such a failure because my marriage fell apart and I did nothing wrong? And we do feel like that. We do feel that we failed, even when we know on an intellectual level that it wasn't our fault that our husbands are gay, but somehow we still feel that we did something wrong. I mean, how do you get past that?
Well, this is where, Bonnie, you and I are very different in how we approach straight wives, because one of the things that I love about Bonnie is she's very empathetic and very understanding, and she's the person that's going to hold on to you and make sure you're okay even through all the vicissitudes of all of that. But, see, I'm a fighter.
I'm a kick-ass fighter, and I'm a forward-thinking coach.
And so even though I hear what Bonnie is saying, and if that's where you are, this is not anything against you at all, not at all, because I've been there, and Bonnie had to hold me together virtually many, many nights. But at some point, the warrior in you, something, the survival instinct in you starts kicking. At some point, it might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but at some point, you hear that one last put down from your ex-gay husband, and something inside of you says, hell to the no. And that's what I mean when I say change the way you think. At some point, the survival part of you is going to kick in. It happens all the time. Look at all these reports we hear of battered women, abused women that end up being taken out of their house in handcuffs because they burned the bed and the husband was in it. There's something in you that retaliates against being treated really but substandard and less than who you deserve to be. And you might not, like I said, you might not be there right now, but there has to be something in you that wants more, or else you would not be listening to this show. There's something in you that, even if you don't have the strength, that wants to hear something that can help you take a step out. Even if it's a step in your mind. But you got to take a step in your mind to want more, to reach for more. And so
that's so true. You know, I tell women,
Suzette,
I tell women, before you can be physically free, you have to be emotionally free. You know, you don't have to start off by walking out that door. You have to start out by saying, I don't want to be treated this way anymore. I don't want to have to go to bed crying at night every night. I don't want to have to try to pretend to my children I'm happy and they see me crying and they're asking me, Mommy, what's wrong? You know, you get to the point where you just have to say, I just don't want to do this anymore. And that doesn't mean you have to walk out that day. But that's the day when you start becoming emotionally, what I call emotionally liberated, so that you can become physically liberated down the line. Even if it's a plan that takes 5 years or 4 years or 2 years. And I always like to bring up my dear friend, I won't mention her name on the air, but one of the members of our group who I love, she's like a sister to me. And when she first came to me, you know, she said, look, I know what I have to do. It's just going to take time. I said to her, it doesn't matter how much time it takes. You just have to have a plan. And even if you get sidetracked on the plan, and even if it takes you 5 years or 4 years, and it took her about 5 years, you know, to have all her ducks in place, to be emotionally free, to have things straightened out with the children. But when she moved on, she did it with grace, dignity, and she did it the way she wanted to do it, but she did it. And she said, "You never gave up on me."
Yeah.
And I said, "No, I never do give up on anyone who wants to be free. But if you don't want to be free, I'm really not the person to come to, you know, because I can't be blessing marriages that are destructive." Right?
You know I'm not. Nobody can talk me into it because I'm out of it. And that's one of the things that you, when you were talking about she planned, it might have taken 5 years. I have in my notes, sometimes you got to plan a jailbreak. Because you know you're in that closet with that person. And sometimes you got to plan a jailbreak. There is this movie, and I think, Bonnie, you and I talked about Shawshank Redemption, where one of the main characters was accused, was found guilty of a crime he did not commit. And he went through hell in that prison. I mean hell in that prison, and to the point of being sodomized by, gang raped by men. Every day he went to work at the laundry. I mean, it just was horrific. But the thing that was so brilliant that nobody knew until you got to the end of the movie, and spoiler alert, I'm getting ready to spoil it for some of you, but one of the things that you find at the end is that all during his time, his years in prison, he had hidden a spoon, and behind the picture hanging in his jail cell, he was slowly digging his way out.
One spoon at a time.
At some point, one spoon scoop at a time, all while people were sleeping, he was working on getting free and ultimately dug a brilliant pathway, dug a cave outside that jail cell, and it was small. It was small. He had to wriggle his way. It was a small, it wasn't a big cave. It was only big enough that the picture could cover it, but it was enough room for him to get his body in it. And he kept right on doing it and wriggled his way out, went down through the sewer, swam in refuse, and got out of there. And it was so funny. He was dropping subtle hints to his best friend that he had made in prison and said, "When I get out, I want you to meet me under this tree." And the guy knew about it, and it ended up being that that guy kept right on digging and digging. He dug his way out, and it was so funny. The guards found that came into his bunk, his cell, only to find that he had put clothes in his bed to make it look he was sleeping. And that picture there, but he was not in the cell. And come to find out, he had dug his way out. And I say that to say, ladies, if you really want out, if you really, your heart weeps and longs to be free, you will find a way. The universe will send some way to help you to be able to do what you have to do to get free. Will it be easy? No. It'll be one of the hardest things you've ever had to do in your life. But will it be worth it? Yes. It'll be worth it. It will be worth it.
I think freedom of all kinds is definitely worth it. And just not having to walk on eggshells every time you're walking and crunching those nails and the eggshells going through your feet because you're afraid of tripping over on, you know, your husband or getting yelled at or being berated. You know, just have that freedom of not being pushed around or talked down to, or the emotional anxiety that comes with going to bed every night, hoping he's going to want you, but if you try to touch him, he pulls away from you, or he tells you that there's something wrong with you or berates you. Even though women just get so hung up on this and they keep, you know, thinking that they love this man, this man can never love you the way you need to be loved. Is that
and
true?
And you know what, Bonnie? The truth of the matter is when a person treats you badly and you have an attachment to it, they call that battered wife syndrome. And then there's another word for it for when they have found young girls or children whose father or significant authority was having incestuous relationships, or even they might have been kidnapped, and they end up developing feelings for the person that kidnapped them. It's something that happens to a person's mind when they start having feelings for someone who is not treating them well. But it's not love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that's
very,
what
very
people don't understand.
That.
Right.
Not
and,
love.
You know, no. And one of the things that Janine Finelli, who's, you know, part of our network, you know, when I met Janine several different times at our healing weekends, she has tattooed on her wrist, "Love is kind." And that always hangs in my head because it's so true that if somebody truly loves you, then they're kind to you. And that doesn't mean that you don't have an argument here or there, but love is kind. And that's what love is about. And I think we lose that perspective somewhere along the line. You know, we go get married with good intentions, but through being browbeaten or dehumanized or put down over time, we lose that concept, but that's what love truly is. And if you're not in a relationship where somebody is kind and nurturing to you, then you're not going to, you know, sit and grow. It's like I always say, we're like flowers. We have to be watered in order for us to bloom and grow. If you have the right man who's nurturing you and who's making you feel like you're, you know, everything important to him, that helps you grow internally as a person. I know it did for me when I felt, you know, met the man who I've been with now for 22 years and 10 months as of yesterday. And, you know, it's been a long time.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. We celebrate every month, too. But the thing is that.
I don't remember you telling me that.
Yeah, we're old, but we still celebrate. And the thing is that. Yep. But the thing is that if I hadn't had him through all these years, you know, always encouraging me, always making me feel good about myself, you know, making me feel like I'm number one importance to him and that, you know, to him I'm beautiful. He doesn't care if I'm fat or if I'm not as, you know, attractive as the next person. To him I am, and that's what counts. And he always makes me feel good about me. So when you feel good about yourself, you are able to thrive. But when you're in a relationship with someone who's telling you, you know, you're not smart enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not thin enough, you're too heavy-chested, you're too thin-chested, you know, you're too boring in bed, you have bad breath, you smell bad, and somebody who's always insulting you, how do you thrive and grow with that? I don't get it. You know, you just die with it. Just like, right?
You can't. That's why I think we both agree in you need to leave. Make a plan to leave because, I mean, some people treat their pets better than they treat their husbands and wives. And, I love animals. Yes, I do. But don't get it twisted. That's an animal. I'm a human.
And if you're going to treat
your animal that way, you're not going to treat Rover better than you treat me. No. No. I tell you, and that's why I think we both agree when people are like, well, you know, I want to find out how I can stay. Well, I can't tell you that because I couldn't stay. I stayed like the person whose article you read. I stayed 5 years too long the first time and 5 years too long the second time. You know, so I totally get. Yeah, and I was looking at the other boundaries as well, Bonnie, because I don't want to end without, you know, bringing up the last two. And the last two I had was you have to take responsibility, you know. That's one. You have to accept that things are as they are because of your consent. And I know it gets hard sometimes when we're dealing with our gay husbands. It gets very difficult because of the insults and because of them not really talking to us in a way that affirms us. But we do have to, at some point, take responsibility. For those of you who are trying your best to stay with somebody who isn't treating you right, then at some point you have to stop blaming him for that, because you're making that decision to stay. For whatever reason, you're giving consent, and so you have to take responsibility for that. You know, and some of you might say, well, I am taking responsibility. I told him I don't like the way he talks to me. I confronted him. You know, I asked him if he was gay, straight up, you know, and he didn't say anything. He, you know, but your life and your peace and your health is your responsibility. And until
and
you
not,
start
not only
saying,
that, but could you bring up one other issue also, Suzette, is
mm-hmm.
that you have children to think about as far as what message you're giving your daughters and what
yeah.
messages you're giving your son. When you stay in a marriage where they see you're being, you know, treated very poorly, then isn't this the expectation they're going to have in their own lives about how to be treated?
Yes. It's going to manifest in some way. Intimacy issues are going to manifest. Because that's what you modeled. That's what they've seen. And even and think about it. Both you and I have probably said, I'm not going to be my mom. I'm not going to be like my mom. I'm not going to be like my dad. And we still struggle with some of those behaviors that are familiar. So if your children grow up in a situation where it's awkward or strange, and I think I told you this, Bonnie, when I was trying to decide whether to leave my gay husband or not, and he and I had gotten to a point where we were able to be civil around each other. But I remember our son was downstairs in the kitchen. All of a sudden, I started hearing pots and pans hitting the floor and heard him start screaming and kicking and yelling. And we both went, I came running down the stairs, and my ex-husband came out of the bedroom. We were like, what's wrong? What's wrong? He said, the walls are screaming. And I think we don't realize, we think because our children might not see us yelling or might not see the fact that when we go to bed, he doesn't touch us or the sex is awkward or strange or weird or we don't feel good about ourselves or whatever way we're doing it. We think that because they don't see it physically with their eyes, they're not being affected. But these things carry an energy. They carry an aura, and kids pick up on it. And they internalize the aura. They internalize the violence. They internalize the anger. They internalize the abuse. Whatever form it's in, whether it's sexual abuse or emotional abuse or verbal abuse or, you know, economic abuse, they internalize it. And it shows up.
And a lot of times they hold themselves responsible for it also.
Yes.
You know, they feel
that
they're the cause of your unhappiness. You know, they can't understand that it could be their father who's the cause of it. So,
yeah, they don't
you know,
want
they
to
blame themselves
it.
For your unhappiness, and they feel all guilty and anxious over it. And how many women do you hear who tell you, because they tell it to me all the time, that my children don't know I'm unhappy because I hide it from them?
Oh, my gosh. And I'd be thinking to myself, really? You really think you're getting up on your kids? Do you really think so? Now, maybe if they're three or four, but even that, the kids feel the energy of it. They might not say it, but a lot of times you find in unhappy homes, babies just cry, 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 and can't be consoled. So a lot of things manifest in our children. They might not have the words for it, but they're picking up on the energy of it. They pick up on the energy of it. Look at the kids who sadly were young when their father killed their mother in the house in front of them. They often think they were too young. They were too young. They didn't know what was happening. They were too young. Then later on, they start manifesting violence and anxiety and chaos and all these different things because the energy that they lived in before the ultimate violent act took place was being internalized in their little bodies even then. So I beg to differ. I think the kids do know. They may not have the words for it. They may not have the experience of it, but they pick up on the energy of it.
I think children always know, and I know that when I was younger and my parents would argue, and even though they thought we were sleeping and, you know, they put us to bed, we still heard what was going on, and we did blame ourselves for their unhappiness, you know, because what happens inevitably is they would argue about the children, because when you can't be honest and argue about the right things, then you argue about all the other things.
Exactly.
And when they argued about the children, then we thought, well, there must be something wrong that we're making our parents so unhappy and fight. So it was very, you know, horrible for us listening to this, even though they thought we were sleeping. And that was in a straight marriage. That wasn't even a straight gay marriage. And, you know, it was just very hard. So certainly in these marriages where there's so many other things going on and so many other bad feelings and negative feelings, you know, it's really hard for women to understand this. You're not kidding your children. You know, you may think that they're sleeping or that you're putting on a happy face, like you tell me, oh, yes, I'm being brave in front of my children. They don't know I'm upset. Yes, they do.
Yes,
trust
they do.
Me, they know. Children know.
And
they children are so much smarter than we were, right?
They're very smart. And the thing that we don't understand is when we do that, we're teaching our children to lie. We're teaching them to lie about how they feel. We're teaching them to suppress and let negative feelings and let things fester inside of their little souls and their little hearts. When somebody says, Mom, you're crying, I'm all right. No, you're not. And the kids get this confusing message, and then you wonder why they can't figure it out later, because they don't know what side to be on. They don't know what side to be on, you know, for themselves. They don't know whether to be on the side of acknowledging how they feel or on the side of suppressing how they feel and putting on a happy face. And I go, they're okay. And then that's why a lot of times, and it's not all the time, but sometimes I know, at least with my son, when you become a teenager, that's when it manifests. A lot of times it manifests when they become teenagers. I thought my son was fine, doing well. Then he hit teenage, and I'm like, oh, dear goodness. Whoa, he wasn't as together and handling as well as I thought. I thought because he was making good grades, he was okay. But that's not necessarily true.
No, and that's why I say we have to really look outside ourselves to see the bigger picture. You know, we have to see that what we think we're doing in protecting our families is also often harming our families.
So,
you know, and sometimes we really have the, right?
That's so true, and it's so funny because what we're talking about is getting healthy, which was the fourth boundary that I had down, is you have to get healthy. You have to. If you cannot get healthy in that marriage with that man because of the things that he's doing, some of us, we're dealing with him being neglectful, disinterested, that kind of abuse. Then others of you are dealing with more intense physical abuse, that when you stand up for yourself, he smacks you down, literally. And so you have to do what you have to do to get healthy. Some of you can get healthy in the relationship or in that environment before you leave. Others of you, you got to leave to get healthy. And so your children and you can get healthy, because otherwise, there are no boundaries. You can't set any boundaries, because whenever you try to, he imposes himself violently against you. So the fourth boundary that I have is get healthy. Get healthy. Stop tolerating the sickness without going to the doctor. You know, even sometimes there's certain sicknesses that we have to be checked into a hospital. get out, if you have to go to a shelter, if you have to go stay with a friend, if you have to go and see your parents, get out. If this man is abusing you, choking you till you woozy, hollering at you, threatening the children, then get your butt out. There is no good reason to stay in that. No good reason.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I know that it's hard, but there's lots of help out there. And once again, we invest in everything except ourselves. And when you're in a jam, you got to invest in yourself. And if that means coaching, you know, I always say Suzette is an amazing coach because she helps you move from one phase of your life to the next phase without too many stops along the way. And, you know, she is like a tough love coach, but that's okay. You know, she's helping you move ahead without falling back time and again. And for those women I know who have worked with her, you know, they can't say enough wonderful things about her because she puts their life in a better place with them. And I just want to let people know that during this holiday time, I know next week I have one of our women, Christy Van Sickle, coming on, who's one of our coaches. And, you know, she's wonderful. Patsy Ray Dawson, who's our Christian coach, you who can coach everybody who just wants to be uplifted. You know, this is a good time to do coaching with people because it is a holiday time when you go through extra stress. You know, if you're just getting out of a marriage, it's extra depressing. If you're in a marriage, it's really depressing, you know, because you could be fearing that it's ending and not knowing what your future is. There's so many different variables of where you are in the road to recovery and the road of grieving, because you can't even begin to grieve until your marriage is over. And some, I remember for myself those first early year holidays, first year, second year, you know, when we weren't, you know, the nuclear family anymore, and I was on my own as a single mom. And it was really very sad sometimes. I didn't have support back in those days because we didn't know from, you know, where to go for support. So now we know so much more, and women should really do whatever you have to get the support you need to get through this holiday time. And I always call the holiday time starting right around now, from right before Thanksgiving until February when it's Valentine's Day. And that's my big jumps to get over, because you have Thanksgiving, all these family love holidays. Then you have Christmas. Then you have New Year's. And finally it ends with Valentine's Day, where you have all this family togetherness brought up to your mind once again that you're alone, that you're not in that loving relationship that you had dreamt of all these years, that you thought you were in, and all of a sudden it's over, no matter what the variation is. You know, you have to realize also, women, and Suzette will confirm this, some of you thought you were in wonderful marriages, and it wasn't all bad for many people. And those are the ones that I feel the sorriest for, because here they were thinking they were married to their soulmates, their life was going wonderful, and then one day they wake up and boom, it's over. And without warning or not having any clue, why would it be over? We were just together. We're the soulmates of the century. Everybody thinks we're the couple of the year. Well, it's over because he told you that he met a man and he's gay. And sometimes it just goes down that way. And those are the ones that I feel the worst for, because they were happy in their marriages. So now you have to face all these holidays on your own, and it's very hard to not break down. So that's why coaching is a wonderful opportunity to pull yourself together during this time, keep on track, and stop from falling back into a terrible depression. And Suzette, tell people how they can get in touch with you at your beautiful website.
Yes. For those that want to get in contact with me, my website is www.coachsuzette.com. I made it easier. And Bonnie was telling me that it was very difficult. I had to spell it and hyphenate and all
It was horrible. It was like, here is how to get to me in the longest way possible.com. Right. That's what I think it was. So this way there's no, I mean, the worst you could do is screw up the spelling of Suzette. Try it a few different ways. But I know that I put it out in our newsletter that just went out this week. I was so upset I sent out the wrong newsletter. I had to resend it to everybody. It took me like 2 hours after people started sending me notes. There's a shortness in your newsletter. Yes, it was the wrong one. But anyway, the one that came corrected, Suzette is in there with her email, with her website, so that you can, you know, look her up right away, plus a link for this show so that you can go back to it. But I really appreciate every month, Suzette, how you come steadily and faithfully to help our women move to the next phase of their life. And I know that those, once again, who are fortunate enough to do coaching with you, really can find happiness that they didn't think was within their reach. And that's what coaching is about. Not dealing on what your problems were from the past, but moving from, you know, the problem until tomorrow without having to drag yourself, you know, like through therapy, which a lot of women need coaching. They don't need therapy. They need to put their lives on track now, right?
Exactly. And what I do is I keep before them what they can have. You know, I'm a very passionate person. They'll tell you that, but I'm not mean and I'm not hard, because my thing is I have been, most of everything I've heard anyone say, I have been there. So I know what it feels like. It's not that I'm able to do this because I don't know. I do know. I do know, God, trust me, I do. It's just that I know, I just have confidence in the human spirit. I have confidence that something inside of you decides at some point, this is enough. I'm sick of it. I'm ready for change. And when you're ready for change, I will take you there in spades. We will laugh. We will cry. But we'll keep moving forward.
And that's the most important thing, is that to keep moving forward. You know, and especially during the critical time like the holidays, when people around you are with their loved ones and all laughing, and it's such a difficult time. I know holidays for me, I used to hate them. Hate them. I would just cringe.
I did too. The Hallmark Channel, I did. It's like you look at it, but then you feel worse and worse. Every holiday movie always has some kind of a love, romantic love thing as being the magic of Christmas. And you're sitting there like Florida Evans going, damn, damn, damn. You know, the whole time you're looking at it. So
exactly. Well, Suzette, I want to thank you once again. I want to send a shout out to a very special man, Scott. I know he listens to all of your broadcasts because, you know, he finds them so inspiring. We shout out to you,
Hello.
Scott, and hopefully your days will be better too. And to anybody who's in pain right now, anybody who's suffering, please just write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll make sure you have support set up for you. And Suzette, you know I love you.
I love you too, sweetie. I do. And I want to say a special hi to my SWC Retreat sisters.
Thank
you all for listening too. We tight.
Well, maybe you'll be tight enough to come back up for the next one in April, Suzette.
Love I know,
see you
right?
And have you again.
I'm going to see what I can do.
Right, you can make it a joint visit with us and your son, right?
Indeed. I know
That's
he'll
right.
be thrilled about it.
I'll just keep reminding you each month till it's good. All right, well, good night to all of our wonderful women. I love all of you. And hang in there. Write to me. Any support you need, we'll hook it up for you. And Suzette, I'll talk to you again next month.
All right, darling.
All right, love you.
Love you more.
Ah, thanks. Mwah. Bye.
Bye-bye.